Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a May. That's right, May edition. May 7th, actually, edition of the MSP Initiative MSP Talk. We're gonna get through the housekeeping real quick and then get on to the good stuff like we usually do. Here is that housekeeping. Ready? MSPinitiative.com. This is pretty much everything that we do, kind of in one place. So this session, for example, is being recorded, and we're going to post it onto the podcatchers, YouTube pages, all that jazz, or under the sessions page on MSPinitiative.com. Like, share, subscribe, forward, all that jazz. That is what it's there for. We do these for you. Hopefully, you take advantage of them. You keep coming back, that's for sure. Actually, today's guest, who I'm going to introduce in a second, was with us at our Nashville MSP Community Minds event, which went swimmingly, by the way, and we'll talk about it once we get past these housekeeping items. But we will be doing another MSP Community Minds at the end of September. We'll be posting the date shortly. If you want to check out what MSP Community Minds was, you can go to MSP Community Minds at MSPinitiative.com. You see it's up top, and you'll see we had a bunch of MSP panelists and expert workshop givers who, across 2 days, didn't PowerPoint you to death and actually tried to like take you from an idea and the actual practical application of the idea, right? So we'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. But if you're interested in a super educational event, that's what MSP Community Minds was invented for. Again, we have at least one more of these in the calendar for this year in Denver in September. We promise we'll share the dates with you as soon as possible. Hopefully you'll be able to join us. Then we get to the fun stuff, the after-hour stuff. We have two MSP community block parties coming up. Oh, there's several actually more this year, but the next two are both on the same week. So either you're going to be hopefully joining PAX 8 at their Beyond event, a conference in Denver, June 9, 10, 11. And if you are, on June 10th, we will be holding an MSP community block party with the great folks at PAX 8 for PAX 8 Beyond. You can already click on this link and go ahead and register and get your QR codes and like get ahead of the line, right? So if you haven't already, there's two links here, right? MSPs and anybody other than an MSP. So, use the right link. Register ahead of time so that we don't have to do the whole you're standing at the door, doing your cell phone screen thing. So definitely join us there. We'll be announcing our entertainment for that event very soon. I'm super excited on that one. And then if you happen to be around last year and were on the other side of the ocean and joined us for Kaseya DataCon in Dublin, well, we're going back and we'll be running our MSP community block party at the DataCon Dublin event. Here you go. Same deal. Links are registered. Registration links are there. So that would be on June 12th. Yes, we love airplanes here at MSP Initiative. So those are the two that are coming up. Check them out under community block parties at MSPinitiative.com. Register, register, register ahead of time. We can't wait to see you there, especially, obviously, MSPs cost you absolutely nothing. It doesn't cost you anything for Community Minds. Doesn't cost you anything for the community block parties. You just need to show up and have a good time. So I think that would be a good thing for you. Community offers, these are just deals and hookups from companies around the industry that may or may not apply to you. Feel free to take advantage. Lastly is our industry calendar that we keep on updating as time goes on because, everybody likes to throw events. And if you wanted to be on the road every day of the week, every day week of the month, and every month of the year, you surely could. I would say you should pick and choose wisely, but there are so many to choose from. So you see our industry calendar there. That is all of the housekeeping, MSPinitiative.com. Now we get to the good stuff. Like to bring, I think for the first time on the podcast, Chris from CompTIA. How you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Swear I just saw you a few weeks ago.
Absolutely.
So number one, thank you so much for joining us at MSP Community Minds. I know Matt Lee was originally supposed to, come on in, along with you, and then he got like triple booked. No problem. You guys like work together all the time. We're going to talk a little bit about what you guys have been baking up on both sides. But what did you think of MSP Community Minds?
I thought it was a very unique, I would even go so far as to say intimate setting where I was just kind of saying before the episode that, we had an opportunity to talk to people as if we were, sharing dinner, right? Like it wasn't large volumes of people filling rooms up, and there wasn't pressure like to buy, or the pressure to, you didn't feel like someone had an alternative agenda other than to be there and be present.
Yeah, no, I that's really what we were after, to be honest. I know there's a lot of people in the sandbox that are trying to help kind of turn the tide a little bit, but
Sure.
like how many trade shows, how many booths, how many credit card swipes, how many, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I understand there's a time and a place for everything. Got it. But excuse me, we definitely heard the messaging that, hey, we want to go and actually learn something. Like, I want to take time out of my regular day-to-day business life and actually come back with something net positive. And
Yeah.
I think one of the things that we've heard for Chris, and I'm sure you've been around for a long time, you've seen it, is like, hey, I went to a session at an event and like the theory of something was presented to me, right? The idea, the concept. But then like I walked away with, I guess I need to do a lot of homework here to figure out what to do, right? In
Right.
order to implement. And I think that's for a guy that has been in hundreds of sessions at hundreds of events over the years. It's like, man, I keep on like doing housekeeping around here and I find my notes. I found my notes from
Yeah.
IT Nation 2012 the other day. And
Oh, nice.
I was like, I don't think I read this after I wrote this, right? And so I think that's kind of what we were trying to do differently with MSP Community Minds. So thank you for number one, coming. I know you're a busy guy. Number two, helping educate the masses, right? We're going to talk about that in a second. Couldn't have done it with everyone who kind of put their time in. And so, I hope that we're doing our little part here at MSP Initiative, along with several others, right? And I could name five right now, top of my head, who are like, hey, I really want to change the model of how the events work in our space and our sandbox.
Yeah.
So, I know that we're just one little drop in the bucket, but at least we're trying.
I think it's more than a drop in a bucket. I think the industry is starting to wake up, and they're starting to recognize that their time is valuable, and going to events where I think you said it well, of the theory, or there's a theme that says, when I get to the end of this, I'm so excited, like for the punchline. And then the punchline is like, if you buy our suite of products or our service subscription, we'll help you do that. And I think that while those aren't necessarily bad, it's more of like, am I ready for what they have to offer going into this? And in many cases, you get to that quote punchline and you realize, like you said, I got to go home and do some homework. I'm not ready. The show special is not going to make this move any faster for me. And now that we're, I go back in time, like let's go back, 5, 6 years. We didn't have the same type of vendor overload like we do today. There were some overlaps. There were some vendors that were in the same space, right? But we didn't have this, like, I can, roll the dice and whichever number comes up, then I'll use that vendor that does this thing. And I think that's one of the things that's really unique today is that overlap's different now. I go and choose a product based on the value proposition that makes sense for my business, even though there's five of you that do what would be on the surface almost the same thing. And the reality is, the same thing doesn't mean implemented the same way.
No. Actually, that was one of the things, not to go too crazy down the road, right? But it's like, hey, anytime somebody comes up with a new bundle offering, right? And again, not knocking on them, I'm just going to use them as the most recent example, right? We heard about,
Alphabet 365.
exact Kaseya 365, right? Like
Sure.
they've packed a lot of stuff into, they took a Microsoft approach to their
Sure.
40-ish companies. And they're like, hey, we're just going to pack a whole bunch of stuff together and then we're going to charge a really aggressive price. Awesome. I wonder, have they been able to streamline? I don't know because I wasn't at the event, right? I'm
Sure.
learning like everybody else online. It's like, hey, if there's 20 something things underneath of that one product SKU that's now bundled, am I still touching 20 separate things to implement it, or has it been streamlined at all? I don't know the answer to that, but like, bottom line is, the time to switch, and like we hear MSPs, like I've heard it for years, right? It's like, oh, well, I'm thinking about switching vendors in the same category. I was like, for what purpose? Was it
Right.
price? Is it just not working? Did you have an event of some bad thing happen to you? Like, yeah, you know, we thought we were going to get a better deal. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. Like, we all like to save money, but like, what about your time costs, right? Like, there's an effective labor rate for everybody in every company. Like, did you figure out what that was and before you decided to make a change? Because if I'm adding something net new to the company and it's going to bring more value, more revenue, more, you know, services that I wasn't offering before, that's different, right? Like, I'm
Sure.
technically investing in something net new. But if I'm just replacing things in the same line items, like, you know, when do I actually stop doing that, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just seems
Yeah.
like it's difficult.
I think there's like three things that come to mind for me on that that are, I think, matter. I think MSPs make emotional decisions. MSPs are human. So we all are, if you've ever, you know, and I think vendors do too. I think the emotional piece of this is often tied to the least mature part of the operational maturity. So if I, to your point, like if it's in the same category, if I'm making an emotional decision, you know, what do they say when, you know, you're ready to react and you're like, okay, take a deep breath, count to 10. Is it really worth me getting, you know, amped about this? And I think that's one thing that comes to mind first and foremost is like, am I making an emotional decision? Because if I am, it likely has more negative than positive consequences for my company. The second one is cost is a big deal. And I think as we see that, you know, I had a conversation this morning, they were talking about, you know, the things that are continuing to get added up running in system tray that makes a machine either you're buying a beefier machine to get the same performance, or you're going, what things in here do I really, really, really need? You know, what things were configured incorrectly that I now need to readjust, and that all comes back to cost. And I think one of the things that happens when we look at cost for vendor products is we really only look at the cost of the transaction, not the cost attached to someone on my team or even, say, a vendor team being able to, you know, what does the FTE look like to implement, manage, and continuously monitor what we've acquired? And I think, and then the third one would be, what's the impact to our current operational efficiencies, good, bad, or otherwise? And have we evaluated that before moving forward? I mean, because an emotional decision, hey, we're doing this, and you go look at the operational efficiencies, you're like, yeah, I'm willing to take that hit. Or, hey, I had no idea this actually is a good decision. But again, I think if you don't do those other two things, because we've seen it, right? Ping pong with RMM, ping pong with PSAs. I will never go to that vendor again. I was burnt once, and you know, now we packaged a robust offering that's very aggressive, and you're like, oh, look, all of my problems go away. I now have a control over my monthly recurring costs.
I mean, at the end of the day, here's, you know, or I'm gonna just go in the big picture, because the end of the day is not till the end of this session.
Sure.
Cost is important, labor rate is important, profitability is important, but I also really like want to hit on the fact that you need to be pretty confident that you can deliver what you've marketed to your end customer, right? Because
Oh
like
boy,
this
yeah.
happens too many times, right? Like they're like, yep, we got it, it's covered, until it's not covered, problem happens. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, my expectation as a customer was, you got me, I'm covered. But in
Sure.
reality, I ran into an issue. And then like this starts happening. And then all, you know, the finger pointing. And then all of a sudden it's, well, my vendor said it was set it and forget it, and I didn't have to look at it. And it's like, that's not true. That was never true. And like, if that was the messaging,
Failure.
I feel like that was, you know, a little naive. Either you were naive to just take it for what it was, or you were missold by somebody who didn't care. Either way,
We're
there's
talking
no
about
better
toggle
set it.
switch syndrome, right? Like,
Yes.
oh no, like yeah, you just turn it on. It's like, well, how do you know it didn't get turned off? Like, unless you go look. Yeah, no, I think that's a big one. I think you know, we see this a lot. I remember early days of my career having an MSP. It was that very thing. In fact, I remember going to different trade shows or vendor, you know, the vendor pavilion. And you're like, that's definitely what I need. Why do I need it? Because I'm here and there's a good show special and I like shiny objects. But what I did find, like, if you're not careful, no matter how important that product is to your ecosystem of what you're delivering to clients, you often saw this. It wasn't just finger pointing. It was full on vendor bashing. The one product I bought on a Tuesday, I tried to implement on a Thursday and it didn't go well. And it's obviously the vendor's fault, right? Like we, it, and I think it's still some today, but I think less so as the world around us has woken up to the fact that, you know, you're not going to just implement whatever you buy if you don't have the resources to do it.
Well, and that in itself is a major problem that I still see on a regular, right? Like, hey, an MSP signs up for service, and their expectation is that you're just gonna the vendor's just gonna do it all for them.
Sure.
Like, the vendor has a okay idea of what you're doing, and like has a pretty good ballpark idea of what your outcome hopefully should be. But at the end of the day, like, there are specifics to your business that they're never gonna know. There are
Right.
specifics to your end customer, they're never gonna know.
Sure.
And like, the idea that you're just gonna offload it to someone without being involved, I just don't see it.
Yeah. If you think about a lot of the technologies that are out there and fill in the blank, and I know for you and being in the VoIP services space, I remember back in the early 2000s when VoIP first became a thing, and it suddenly took the little guy that had three employees and put them in this competitive space from a communication standpoint with all the big players, and I don't have to spend six figures on my phone solution, right? But what was interesting about that as we progressed forward, I think in a lot of areas we regressed because, you know, the conveniences of cell phones started to grow and, you know, people are still like, well, I still need my faxes. So we'll accommodate that too as we advance in technology. But what was interesting is you still had a lot of businesses that were largely in the IT services space that didn't actually understand how VoIP even works. And so they're
Still don't,
spending
but great.
money. And then it's like the vendor problem when, you know, QoS doesn't work right. And I'm like, well, we can control QoS between the firewall or your network perimeter and our phone system, but I can't control that you've got, you know, kids with Xboxes on the same VLAN, right? Like, and that was mind-boggling for some. They're like, well, why can't they account for that? Like, why are you in this space, you know?
I, and that I by the way that hasn't changed in
No.
2024. I think we're still fighting the same problem, just for the record. But anyway, before we get too far down the line, because we're already 19 minutes in, Chris, like, for people who don't know you, don't know your story, don't know your
Sure.
journey, give it to us. What's your background?
Sure. Once upon a time, I was an MSP. And, you know, before that, I was like many MSPs where I was like, I can do what I'm doing today better than the IT services company that I'm working for. And that progressed over the course of about 5 years to figuring out I'm going to start an MSP. That was back in early 2007. Did that for about 6.5 years and realized that if I really wanted to make a difference in the security and compliance space, I needed to do it on a bigger platform or bigger scale. And so Josh Smith and I started looking at like, should we still have an MSP? We started talking to bigger ones and we realized that we could do a whole lot more if we were to switch up and work with a much larger MSP. And we did that for a couple of years. And then realize like, hey, let's go ahead and merge with this large MSP. And we continue to do security and compliance. And sort of the rest is history. I left that MSP. I went into the MSSP space and went from doing like healthcare compliance security consulting to focusing on mid-market and enterprise banks, doing the financial compliance audits there. And then right before COVID hit, my wife and I realized like, hey, this is a lot of travel. You're gone all the time. Only so much more time left before our kids are going to be out of the house, and you've missed out on a lot of things that, you know, in their middle school and high school years, that's when you see those moments that you want to really capture when they're engaged. They want to know that dad and mom are present. And so I took a, I left the channel. I left the managed services space. I went to a local rural school district and took on the hat of tech director and security officer. And that was the biggest eye opener I had about the industry. I think I'd been living in that blinder space, which was, you know, we have access to all these tools. We put them in and we use them and we do all these things. And I go to a school district and they're like, you get no more staff. And I'm like, what? So, you know, you got 3,000 assets under management and you have two people to manage all of it. And I'm like, kind of like the idea behind being an MSP, right? More assets, less FTEs. So, I started getting engaged in that mindset again as an employee, and it was interesting because I saw myself going again back to that whole impact and what can I do here? And COVID hit. And so when COVID hit, no one's traveling, but in the education space, we were critical infrastructure, so we had to be at school. So what had been planned as 4 years of projects, we did in roughly 1 year because we had no students to work around in the buildings. And so
Yeah, interesting.
4 years of that, and I had an opportunity to re-engage with what we call the channel. CompTIA had an opportunity, and I said yes. So I am now the senior director of cybersecurity compliance programs. So that's two business cards side by side to get that whole thing on there. And basically, my job function right now is to oversee our compliance programs. Obviously, the big one, and what a lot of people, if they are familiar with anything that we're doing, is the cybersecurity trust mark. And we have about 215 MSPs currently in the program, and that grows by about three to five on a weekly basis now, continuously moving forward. And we're starting to see some of those MSPs come through the other side with the trust mark. So that's from A to Z where I've been in the industry over the last, I think
By
I
the
said
way,
5 years.
I love that story, right? Hey, started in the space, graduated through the space, left, came back, trying to do, trying to tackle it from a different angle, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me on the education side, by the way, right? for some reason they have technology. It's just, keeping it running wasn't part of the plan. They just
No.
bought stuff.
They're in a big learning experience because one of the things that's interesting about the K-12 space, and for anybody that's listening to this, it is ripe for the MSPs to come in and really help in K-12. So what's interesting about budgets in K-12 is they don't have a significant platform for tenure of staff. And a lot of times they don't even have a pay scale in a lot of the roles or categories that we're comfortable with outside of K-12. So like a technician, net admin, sysadmins, they just don't have it. So they're comparing it to something that doesn't have any correlation from a value of time. And then the other piece that they have is in a lot of cases, especially where there's lots of urban development, factories, that kind of thing, they often have really good tax system in place. So they have access to technology. They have access to budget to buy the equipment, the subsidized through E-rate and some of those things. So they can spend money that way. And what you find is they can then pay for third-party services because they're not paying for staff. And so you find that balance, and you can make a huge difference in a K-12 space where you've got someone that was a PE teacher yesterday and is now the tech director, spinning their wheels trying to wrap their head around how to manage all these assets, not to mention the tools that we have access to in the MSP space that are big lifts in outside, right? It's not like you can just go and buy any RMM tool if you're
Sure.
not a solution provider. So I just found there was an interesting parallel that was happening. And then I also kept running into people that were from the channel space, the Amy Luby and the like her husband is in the it wasn't is in the tech space, but for the K-12. And I'm like at a conference and I'm like, hey, I know you. And then all of a sudden it's like all these people that are like it was like the other half of spouses and partners that you're running into. And you're like, wait a second, how do we this is weird. Like, and then I realized that that's how small our industry is.
It is super small. That's why I call it the sandbox, right? Because
Right.
like everybody has to play in it. So talk to us about real quick the Trustmark program. Like, why would an MSP look at that versus, I don't know, all these other frameworks, SOC
Sure.
2, and I know the people in government land are all about CMMC because it's changing
Yeah.
every minute, or then you have like the ISO 127, 127,000, whatever, and there's so many, right?
There's definitely
What is it?
alphabet soup of frameworks.
Yes.
So I think the easiest way to look at it is most frameworks are not written for a business type, right? So like PCI DSS, for credit card. They didn't write it and say like, well, this is only applies to coffee shops. It doesn't apply to big box Walmart, right? Like it's for anything that deals with the transaction of credit card data. And similarly, ISO, they're less specific, but they have sort of the same idea. HIPAA, obviously, for healthcare. So when we went about the Trustmark, it was we want this to be unique to solution providers. So we, as Wayne has said, defining an MSP or an MSSP is near impossible in today's world. So we simplified our definition for the Trustmark. So we said, if you provide IT services in part or in whole to another entity, done. If you provide a security service in part or in whole, maybe it's an application, a cloud service, don't really care, but you're providing it to another entity in part or in whole, qualifies. Obviously, that doesn't account for everybody, but today was to do a Trustmark specific to solution providers. And we brought safeguards in from multiple frameworks to make it very unique to the industry that is an MSP or a solution provider. And it is made up of about 123 of the CIS top 18. And then we have that, then the alphabet soup comes in. So NYDFS, HIPAA, 800-171, 853, ISO 27001, that add in another 54 safeguards. And everybody goes, well, when can I use this with my clients? And so we are working on what we call profiles. So we'll have a client profile and a vendor profile. Our goal is by the end of the year. So why the Trustmark for solution providers? Obviously, it's unique. And a couple of the other reasons are a lot of solution providers aren't necessarily working in the regulated space, or they're not sure yet how it's going to impact them for their clients who maybe are regulated, whether it's for CMMC or some of the others. You got to start somewhere. And I think that a lot of what's out there, and I'll quote, Dave Alton said this to me. He goes, what other framework has a community of others dedicated to your success with a set of safeguards? He's like, if you can find that, please point me in that direction, because otherwise I'm going to stick with the Trustmark, because that's a community and it's not something I got to write someone a check to once a month to keep them, you know, helping me on my journey. There's a lot of volunteers that have stepped up and said, we can do this. We can change an industry. And in so changing an industry, we can change how we provide support services to largely the SMB and mid-market space.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty good background of the program. It's definitely gaining steam. There's no question about it. I think in the industry, to your point, right? Something specific to us, right? The people in the sandbox.
Yeah.
I'm not sure their end customers would recognize what that is, right? Like from a, you know,
I have the Trustmark. Now what? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So part of that is on us, CompTIA and others, to raise the awareness from that perspective. Like, what, you know, CompTIA is largely known in the industry. They're not necessarily known for solution providers having a Trustmark. They're more known on the cert side. So we look at this like this is a organizational cert or an accreditation. So it's not a certificate, it's an accreditation. And looking through that lens, we're seeing this take place here in the US. There's a lot of requirements, especially at the DoD or fill in the, you know, 3-4 letter agencies that require those who bid on work with them to have or proof of CompTIA certifications like A+, Network Plus, Security Plus. So this is an easy one to put on top of that and add additional recognition for those types of opportunities. The other one is that the accreditation is being stood up. The accreditation board is, we're working with CREST. That's who we are trying to get this finalized. But, you know, CREST is internationally recognized and they have that ability to add additional credibility for those that maybe aren't familiar with what we do here in the US, or you know, looking at this for the UK, having the Trustmark helps those that are in the UK operate with a security posture that's recognized outside of the UK. And those are big challenges. I don't see this as a replacing other frameworks. In fact, we always say this is a precursor to what you might still need to do, but it should be giving you a good baseline and an approach to a cybersecurity maturity, as opposed to most frameworks are going to be, you didn't do this, therefore you failed. Our approach to this is, you aren't doing this where you need to be. Here's what you need to do in the future to improve that posture. And when you're evaluated again in future assessments, now we can give you that feedback, like, yes, you did mature and you matured in all of these areas. Oh, wait, you went down in this area, because that's normal. That's the reality of the world we live in. It's not going to stay perfect if it ever gets to perfect.
That's fair. And I think to some degree, for people who, for service providers, again, the definition was pretty good. I think the way that what you came up with.
That would be Wayne's definition. I'm not sure I could truly answer a definition for a solution provider anymore.
Fair. I just think it's interesting. Like for the people that, I run into providers, MSPs, IT service providers, whatever you want to call it, who don't have a particular framework that they have to work with for whatever reason, right?
Right.
Could be the size of the customer, the clientele, the verticals, whatever. So, like in that case, they're like, well, I guess we're just going to find something generic, right? Maybe a SOC 2, for example, right? But like, bottom line is, SOC 2 is really, I think, geared at, anybody can do it, but I think it's really geared for an enterprise, mid-market
Sure.
enterprise company.
It's expensive.
It is.
Here's an interesting way to look at SOC 2, because that does come up a lot, because clients have heard that term. They ask, well, my insurance asking for it, you need to do it. Nothing wrong with doing SOC 2. I think it's a learning experience no matter what you do. When I was with the MSSP, we had to go through our annual SOC 2 assessment, and literally it was like, once you're done with it, you're literally starting your prep for the next year. It's a never-ending vicious cycle. And not that any framework is going to be easy when you get assessed, and like, you're not going to have to do more. It's all about continuous improvement. But one thing that's interesting about SOC 2, and I'll just use that one, others are like this too, is you get to define the scope, not the assessor. So in the trust mark, we're saying there is really no limit outside of the boundaries of your organization. So, or sorry, within the organization. So we're saying no rock unturned in looking at the technology that you're using from an asset inventory standpoint to ensure that where sensitive data might live, it is being protected.
I mean, that's pretty clear. Could live in a lot, like probably places that you don't want it to live, let's be honest.
And that's why we have safeguards in there for those questions. Like, well, let's think about, the VMs that you have living in some cloud infrastructure or somebody else's data center. Like, there's a lot of questions to ask. In fact, one of them is talking about data flow. Where does the data go in and out of your organization? ISO and some of the others, they look more closely at data in your organization, like right now, not where it can go or what's coming in, but like what's there today. And most frameworks are going to look at you as a snapshot at that moment in time, not at the historical evidence of how you've been doing or how you did over the year over year. Are you continuously to improve? So, pass fail. I'd like to think that, getting an A or a B, those things really shouldn't matter. It should be more about, can you see an understanding in my organization that we are taking cybersecurity seriously and we're moving our organization in a direction that says, our goal is to continuously improve.
I agree 100%. So, somebody wants to learn more about the Trustmark program, what the process is, and
Sure.
download more information. Where should we send?
So you can literally Google CompTIA Trustmark, Trustmark one word, and it's like the first or second link that shows up. It's pretty clear. It's not a sponsored link, so you're not going, I wonder if this really is the organization. You can email me, cjohnson@comptia.org. But largely, if you're familiar with CIS Top 18, that's two-thirds of the trust mark. So if you're working on that, and maybe you're working in another framework, most frameworks do crosswalk pretty well to CIS Top 18.
Okay, there it is. And we've heard, I know Matt Lee, both in his professional capacity at Pax8, has been working on like CIS stuff, within their portfolio of people on there, but also
Sure.
just generally, CIS, controls for all, right? Like
Right.
what solutions, what products, what fits, like a lot of people that never did the homework, right? So I think part of his like pet projects, which I'm sure you've probably run into, is, hey, like you probably already have a lot of this stuff that you need. You just don't know, right? Like
Right.
you're not aware.
Yeah, and I think something that we often miss is, like, how do you know if your internal process is mature or is maturing? If you don't have something to compare it to, like some sort of a set of standards, something that's recognized in the industry, because I'm pretty sure that we're not individually in our own little bubbles, going to know what's best in class or the right vendor for my sized organization. And to the Matt Lee and I, we're probably collaborating 2-3 times a week sometimes. And the thing you mentioned, like that he's working on, I think is a big deal, the taxonomy of CIS safeguards for vendors. And obviously there's going to be some tie-ins, pretty clearly tie-ins with regards to what we will see as the profile for the trust mark. Facilitate, validate, partially meet or fully meet a safeguard. How are, MSPs supposed to make decisions when a vendor says, yeah, our product satisfies Control 7? You're like, cool, awesome, check the box, right? And then you find out that even if it's implemented perfectly, it was actually only 3 safeguards in Control 7. Now you've got gaps that you didn't know about because you didn't understand what was being shared with you. And so I think this is an industry learning process that's going to raise the bar in what is happening from a security standpoint as we implement tools and services that previously were based on largely whatever marketing says.
Marketing says a lot.
Right.
Still wondering where that single pane of glass thing was
Oh
supposed to
yeah.
be.
Right.
Never happened.
And if it is single pane, it's probably a stained glass window.
Never happened. There was a lot of marketing.
Yeah.
I just don't think it ever was delivered. I digress.
Yes.
Your session that you did at Community Minds, let's talk about that a little bit because I think
Okay.
it was fun. Like other than the donuts, I think
Are
a
you
lot of
saying donuts aren't fun?
I love donuts. I said put the donuts aside for a
Oh,
second.
yeah. Fun without donuts.
Donuts just add to the fun.
So it's interesting. This is the first time I had done this approach to security, defining your security stack. It's something that Matt and I have done quite a few times, both together and separately, like how to dissect and implement what is being told to you in a control. And obviously, we use the CIS Top 18, which translates very same as it would be in the trust mark. And I had some great feedback. I had one criticism that I thought was I was like, duh, just assuming that they would know what the CIS Top 18 was, and we just kind of jumped in and started, talking about security stacks and how to align it with these controls and safeguards, and that someone had never seen before. The idea is instead of buying security tools and services for your organization, whether it's for internal posture or things that you need to do with your clients, the idea here is let the framework be what you're aligning to. Let it tell you where your gaps are. Let it tell you where your risks might live, and then make decisions for what tools and services you're going to subscribe to based on that. Rather than I went to a trade show and vendor X told me I needed their product to solve a gap that I don't understand, have never run into it before, and I'm not sure if I implement it perfectly, that it actually changes any risks for me, even if it might change risks for my client, because I've not applied a gap analysis to this, and then find out, oh wait, 3 of the products you've already implemented actually cover that gap. And so we talk about things like, how often do you review vendors that are in your stack? How often do you look at the roadmaps that they may have that find out, like, I've been looking for this one thing to solve a problem in my security stack, only to find out that one of the vendors I use implemented that 6 months ago. And then it's the best, what's best for me. So I said this several times. Just because it's not the best in class security product or service doesn't mean it's not the best product or service for your organization. Okay can be better than nothing at all. And what you're doing, even if you still have gaps, might be all that your organization is capable of taking on today. So that was kind of the messaging or the theme. We had a packed house on day one. It was really, for me, I felt like I was learning with everybody in the room. There was a lot of great feedback, a lot of big questions that were more of a, that question is going to merit that we kind of slow down, and it's going to take us 5 or 10 minutes to walk through that question and get a conversation going. And then day two, we had donuts. So that drew a little bit of an audience temporarily, kind of like you would at a circus, go to the concessions. But we had a much smaller group on day two, so I kind of shifted gears and we did it a little bit differently. And we ended up with one MSP asked some questions about their situation with one of their clients and navigating and immaturity in their client's environment, and what would we do? How would we address some of those challenges? And it grew into a pretty good conversation, a little bit different, obviously, than day one. And one of the things I think we heard on more than one outburst from those in the room was, have you taken what you're telling us to Bradley Gross, who is across the hall? Because I think, and I'm no lawyer, I've read a lot of John Grisham novels, but I'm no lawyer. I would tell you that I'm pretty confident what he would say. And so we just kind of went through that. And I think a lot of MSPs deal with this particular MSP's challenge, and that is they're writing me a check every month, and it's a pretty significant check. And I have followed my attorney's advice of making sure that I'm giving them written notice. I'm telling them that you've turned down certain services. You know, you're indemnifying me from something if it were to happen. And I think it's a common practice. However, in the world of cybersecurity, that doesn't mean your insurance agrees with that. It doesn't mean that your actual potential negligence or ignorance in that area isn't going to come back and bite you. This is the United States of America, and I can sue you because you blinked funny on a Tuesday. Will insurance then protect me from that potentially frivolous lawsuit? And I think if we said, hey, if I follow the standards of this framework, if I can prove the Trustmark or CIS or SOC 2, I can show something. Now you put yourself in a potential safe harbor situation where there is a little bit more protection. And I think as this continues to move forward, I think those are some of the things that MSPs are really going to have to watch out for.
I mean, lots to unpack there. Bottom line sure. is, yes, so your customer suing you is one scenario, right? But remember, your customer has an insurance company who can also sue you.
Right.
Your customer's customer, because you're in the supply chain, if that's what you want to call it, the path of data transfer,
yeah, you know,
could come after you, right? And so there's that. There's also, hey, you know, like, and we're seeing it now, right? Your customer's customer's customer ends up being a three letter thing, right? And now yes. all of a sudden you're like, well, I didn't know that. I have no idea what this is. And it's like, well, no, like, you didn't have to know, but you're still screwed. Right.
The six
like,
degrees of Kevin Bacon is still, we got to Kevin Bacon.
Right. So, you know, unfortunately, the CYA part of this is a lot more intricate.
Yeah. The T's and C's, no matter how tightly they're dotted, you know, you hear this, it's becoming more of a thing than ever before. Whistleblowers exist and they get a third of the penalties, right? So just looking at that, like, you know, an employee in your own organization could be the one that blows the whistle and you'll never know it was them, other than they might quit because that settlement might have been 30% big enough to I'm retired.
That, I mean, that's there. I mean, the other reality is, you know, I know Matt brought it up last year, like, all right, your insurance company initially paid out, but 3 years later, they came back and decided to change our minds.
Yeah, that's a very specific case. I believe that was Travelers Insurance. I believe it actually happened in Chicago. I think we're going to see more and more of those because I think you have to be able to show evidence to support that your implementation of what you said yes to in that insurance questionnaire has any water, holds any water.
I think if that is the beginning of what could be a tree behind it, right?
Yeah.
The insurance company is basically saying, hey, we came to the conclusion after the fact that this wasn't actually true.
Right.
And, you know, like all of a sudden, what you thought was behind you and done deal is no longer a done deal, right? And now you're in jeopardy, just kick the can down the road.
Yeah, and I don't want to tell anybody not to get insurance, but if you look at it through the lens of most policies now state things like if it's a terrorist act, you know, cyber warfare where a nation state's involved, we're not going to pay out. You know, when it comes to things like ransomware and, you know, data exfiltration, you know, how hard is it to prove that it's not a nation state? So if there's any inkling that it looks that way, you are starting to walk down this path real quick of an insurance going, we're calling that nation state, unless you can prove otherwise.
Yeah, It's a difficult conversation when
it is
bits and pieces, right? And I would argue, or Brad Gross has argued, I'm going to reference Mr. Gross, very expensive to bring somebody else out to validate what you're saying too.
Yeah, forensics in the event of an incident can be extremely costly and is often, I mean, unless you've already engaged insurance, you know, insurance may not cover forensics, or if they do cover forensics, it's only for a certain amount of time or dollar value. And, you know, I've seen forensics experts, you know, their cost to be in the room doing forensics, you know, is in the same ballpark of what a lot of attorneys are charging as an hourly rate. So, you know, dotting our I's and crossing our T's is a very big deal.
Fair. There was somebody, I forget who mentioned it on one of the MSP panels at Community Minds. He said, I know who it was. I'm not going to say his name, but we all know who he is. You know, Mr. Texas. He said, I had an incident. I engaged this insurance, but the insurance's IR people came in because they have their own vendors, yep, right? And what should have been the ability for me to flip the switch and go to my DR plan was paused.
Right.
They wouldn't let me turn on the DR plan for a week.
Right, because they wanted us, because then the evidence potentially is gone.
So they were like, hey, if you go to your backup system, how do we know the backup system doesn't have the same compromise as the production
also
system?
Also true.
So basically they were like, sorry, you need to be on the sidewalk waiting for us to tell you can come back into the building until we're done. And like, that was a week. I mean, business interruption, which is a different insurance to itself. Like, that's a lot of, like, you know, most companies, time and salaries are probably one of the biggest expenses, if not the top, it's probably top three, right?
And after 4 days of not being able to do anything, that often for small businesses, doors close.
And so then there was like that morphed into another discussion of, but your marketing says that you have a DR plan, your contract says that there's a certain SLA to the DR plan, but effectively it's not that I wasn't prepared. It's not that I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
I was literally instructed to not turn it on.
So that's an interesting scenario. I don't think it's unique. I think it's not all that uncommon. What is interesting though, and I've seen this before, is if you have a cybersecurity insurance, hopefully before you ever have to use them, you've had some sit downs with your insurance and kind of go through a tabletop exercise of saying, if I were to use the B word, or if we were to have an incident where I want to at least inform insurance, what does that process look like? Are we working together? Are we on the same team together? Or is this a, I have my team and you have your team? Neither one of those are wrong answers, but if you don't know what the outcomes of the situations are going to look like, you may be making your entire scenario worse as soon as the IR or DR plan gets kicked in, because you may be contradicting what the insurance is saying that they're going to do. So scrutinize that policy. Make sure you're talking to the carrier. These are no small tasks, and they're you know, time consuming. But I think if you put the time in, I think you'll find that the insurance companies are not the bad guys, but they're going to do due diligence, right? I mean, the reality is insurance carriers would not last if they never paid out claims. So let's not give them reasons to not pay the claims that you may have to submit in the not too distant future.
Yeah. And like, by the way, you know, while I'm hearing you say it, Chris, I would say more than the majority have not actually said, hey, let's go through some, you know, scenarios, right? If this happens, what happens after? If that happens, what happens after? And like, they just review the policy, but the execution of what happens because of the policy is really over here.
Yep. When you think about tabletop exercises, you know, it's really easy to all sit around a conference table and start talking scenarios and ask people to put their input. Like, what would you do? Oh, well, I'd call George, right? And some of those are valid because it helps with the responsibility matrix. It's not saying that those are bad things to do, but a true tabletop exercise using scenarios that have happened in the real world to help make it the real deal and say, you know, bring the IR plan, the business continuity plan, bring those to the table because we're going to use those as we go through this exercise. And our goal is to find the holes in those plans so that we can, after action, fix them.
And I'll tell you this, I mean, and you know, going back to our buddy Brad Gross, like if a law enforcement agency comes in and is like, hey, we're confiscating your equipment as evidence,
Sure.
you may not get that back for a long time.
Or ever.
So like in this case, it could turn out to be that,
Right. I
right?
mean, I've seen some that aren't even necessarily that serious, like where there was no way to confidently restore to the hardware because we were pretty confident that the hardware itself had been compromised, like that the BIOS level hack had happened. So you're like, okay. How do we get another $112,000 server in here in the next 72 hours? It's not like we stocked this in inventory or that anybody would have stocked those in inventory. So, I mean, it doesn't necessarily even mean that the data can't be restored or that the assets being seized aren't rightly so. What's the plan look like? You know, how do you operate in a, what can you do to sort of limp along to get back to operational? Start playing through some strategies because I think the reality is bad things will happen to good people. We know that. We see it happening every day. But we can minimize the damage done if we have plans in place.
And if you ask the questions up front on the part that you don't control, right? Once you
Yeah.
invoke the third party, let's call it the
Sure.
insurance company, whatever, like you need to then go back and probably adjust what your verbiage of deliverables are, right? Your
Right.
master services agreement, your scope of work, your committed timelines to what a DR event looks like. Because if you're, even if the sentence is, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but I play one on TV, they tell me.
Yeah.
You know, like in the event a third party instructs us that we are unable to engage the DR strategy,
Right.
you're not going to hold us responsible for missing the predefined SLA or the, you know, the timeline to restoration of your system.
Well, I think what you just highlighted is how many MSPs have looked at their SLAs that are client facing in the context of understanding that you may not be in control of meeting the SLA. So what are the, do you have contingencies or some sort of like, this is the exception. Like if the following things are happening, the SLA has a pause clause or whatever it might be so that you can effectively still do your job. I mean, the reality is no one wants to intentionally not meet an SLA. So it kind of comes back to make sure you're not creating SLAs that you can't meet.
Back to the whole, you better be sure you can deliver the
Yep.
service that you're marketing to your end customer. And so, like, these are the gotchas, right? These are some of the things that I learned, right, as I was
Right.
listening, you know, in the Community Minds crowd. And I was just like, you know, that's it's a really good point, right? Like, there are going to be things outside of your control. And when you use the insurance company as the example, it's like, but we exclude this situation, this situation, this situation,
Right.
and maybe this one too. Like, are you also excluding the things that you effectively don't have control over?
And test it. Test the SLA. I mean, we see this all the time. Let's go buy EDR, XDR, fill in the blank, R. And I work 8 to 5. What is the vendor work? Oh, they're 24/7, 365. What is the client work? Oh, they're really 8 to 3. Okay, so what happens when the XDR vendor or whatever fill in the blank SIM for service, whatever says it's 2 a.m. Who are they calling? Are you going to answer the phone? I mean, then what, right? Like, obviously, an SLA is not met because I'm pretty confident that you promised that customer that 24/7, 365 monitoring because you implemented fill in the blank vendor that provides that service. Who are they calling?
That these are simple questions that sometimes don't get answered in the best way until
For
after the
sure.
problem happens, right? So, so if you're watching or listening to this episode, I want you to like, we touched on like seven themes in this 1 hour session here, but the point here is none of the things we talked about had anything to do about vendor specific stuff, right? We're
No.
talking about the problem, the issue, the result. Hey, the experiences that others people are had already gone through that haven't maybe gotten to you yet, but they're real world, right? They happen. And so I don't, you know, I know I'm still, you know, Mr. Philly old school over here in the Northeast, but like I learn best when I hear somebody else who's effectively in the same position I'm in had gone through something. And I'm like, oh, that's not conceptual. That happened, right?
Right.
So that's the type of learning that I really enjoy. And that's what I appreciate again, you, Chris, for, you know, coming and going through what you went through and some of the other people, right? Like if we have more of that,
sure.
I think everybody's helped. And quite frankly, I saw some of the co-sponsoring vendors of Community Minds who, by the way, like twisted my arm to give them tables, you know, like sure. Not even full tables, just tabletops. They were in the room. They were in the room next to SP
and participating.
The same information.
Yep. I was actually really impressed with that because you see at a lot of events, you know, as vendors and even CompTIA, we're not a vendor per se, but like we have a booth depending on the event. And, you know, one of the things that I was encouraged to do coming up with Beyond, I don't know right now what my level of involvement will be, but like one of the things that was said to me is like, for all of us, it would be beneficial if you just participated as an attendee and just look at what kind of what things are right, what things need to be adjusted. Are you seeing things that we missed? And I'm like, I can do more of that. Like, it's not very often that you speak more than 45 minutes at an event that's running 2 or 3 days. So, you know, stay engaged, right? I think that goes for everybody. If you're at an event and you're there as a speaker, don't let the event pass you by because you have too many other things. And I think MSP Community Minds was a perfect example of that because there's no agenda like what you see at some of the vendor hosted events, right? Like where they, you know, come to the keynote where we're going to tell you about the new fill in the blank 365 or whatever it might be, right? Like, and not that those are wrong, but like, again, if you're not absorbing when those education sessions come along, you might miss something.
I agree. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I hope you, you know, I know we're looking at the end of September. Hopefully you're available. I'd love to have you back again for Community Minds in Denver. Guys, even if it's not this event specifically,
sure.
There are a lot of learning opportunities out there, right? And like, I challenge everyone to go through the calendar and pick things out that aren't the same things that you've done for years and years and years and years. That like, I get it. I love the networking part too. I love meeting up with the, you know, people and catching up and seeing what's happening. And we all love that part of every event, but there is something to take away. If you're looking for it, is there.
Right. And maybe go with a plan. Like I was looking at PAX 8 Beyond. You said Denver, that popped into my head. So that's coming up in a few weeks. I know there's going to be a lot of education. I mean, they call it Academy for a reason. We've got ChannelCon coming up at the end of July, which will be in Atlanta. And I know very definitively that there's going to be solely focused on educational tracks and cybersecurity and other domains. And then right around the corner after that would be Community Minds all over again.
There is good learning moments that do not require you to swipe a credit card to buy something at the end. I promise you.
Exactly.
Learn from the people around you. And by the way, for the people out there that still think everybody's your competitor, I know there's people out there that do this. I've been saying it for years, castle mentality with the moat and the drawbridge, right. Alligators. There is a completely different situation out there where people are actually sharing, right? Like, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. So if you're open to it, there's something to gain, for sure, for sure. So Chris, how do people find you online other than Googling CompTIA Trustmark?
I'm on LinkedIn. I think it says MSP 1337 is in my tagline. I do a podcast a lot like what you're doing, where I interview people around cybersecurity tracks. That's probably really the social platform that I'm actively on. So I'll just say LinkedIn and then cjohnson@comptia.org. You can get a hold of me there. And hope to see you at an upcoming event. Let's see, my next one is Cybersecurity Summit in Denver next Friday.
Got it. Well, I'll definitely probably see you at Beyond. There,
for
I know
sure.
I will be, and
I will be at Beyond.
We'll definitely talk some more on some of these themes, guys. This
Sounds
session
good.
absolutely recorded. We'll post it later on today on all the feeds. Rewind it. You know, take the pieces out here that are helpful for you. You know, everybody who always comes on here is like, hey, if you want to reach out to me, I'm, you know, happy to help. Right? Like, that's the pay forward mentality. Take advantage of that. I don't know how else to say that. Like, you do yourself a disservice by not, you know, using the resources in the sandbox. They're there for you.
It's community minds for a reason.
Exactly right. And so we'll be talking about dates for September for community minds. If not, again, we're going to look forward to seeing people in person at Beyond. If you're not going to be at PAX 8 Beyond in Denver, our airplane travels will be over in DattoCon Dublin as well. And there's a bunch of other events in between then and the end of the year that we'll be working with as well. So stay tuned. Chris, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you again for your time. Really appreciate it. And for everyone else, catch you on the next one.
Thanks.
Cheers, guys.